Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about restoring extension after ACL reconstruction, set and rep schemes in rehabilitation, and how to determine if loss of motion is a mobility or a motor control issue.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, perform better.
Hey, man.
We're recording. Ready to go? Good.
Yep.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Ask Mike Reinold Show. I am here at Champion PT and Performance with the team here. We got Lenny Macrina, Dave Tilley, Gabe Morgan. We're all here.
Can we change seats?
I was just going to say that. Deja vu. Let's do this. We've been doing this.
Hi, guys. It's Mike Reinold.
Lenny legit wasn't in it.
I think half my body's usually out.
So, welcome back. Deja vu. Yeah, this is better. I like this. We kind of mixed it up today. Different seats. See, what you guys don't know is in our PT room here at Champion, this is essentially where our desks are, and we all just slide back and record. Well, so you can see how we sit at our desks. So,
I don't like it.
Yeah, now this is completely weird. I have to look to the left instead of the right. But welcome back, everybody. Some more great questions. Gabe and Nader, let's do this.
Can you hear Mike from over there? I know it's a long ways away.
It's kind of hard to hear him.
I like it over here. I like it better on this side of the room.
All right. Lisa from San Diego asks, after ACL surgery, is it true if you don't get full knee extension by 12 weeks post-op, you will never, ever, ever, ever get it back?
Did you elaborate on that?
Yeah.
I don't recall
a couple,
that.
A couple extra evers. I did paraphrase a little bit.
I don't remember all those evers on there. But yeah, that's good. All right. Len, I don't know, you're the post-op.
We've seen a bunch of these, and unfortunately, there is hope. Well, unfortunately, there is hope. Unfortunately, we see it. We see it a lot. Unfortunately, there's hope. I think 12 weeks is a little early. I've had people a year or two out that have had issues, and I think it comes down to the person's tissue, whether or not it's extensible enough to be able to get some of the motion back. I've seen people that are pretty lax relative to other people, and you know that tissue type where you really need to pay attention to how frequent and how intense they're doing the stuff that you prescribe at home. So I've had people, again, that if I give them stuff to do at least four times a day, 15 minutes each session, so at least 60 minutes a day, some of the research out of McClure's group has shown that you can get collagen extensibility, collagen elongation that stays in that elongated position, which is essentially what we're trying to do for these people, even after 12 weeks. So I think it comes down to the person's tissue type and the amount of effort the person gives in the home exercise program. So there's definitely hope after 12 weeks. I've witnessed it many, many times.
Definitely hope, but I would just say
not ideal.
It gets harder. The further out you get, it gets harder.
Yeah. I get my hyperextension early on, the first couple weeks. I'm not afraid to get it. I'm not getting full to the other side. If they have 5 or 10 on the other side, I'm getting 2, 3, and it usually comes back after that. I'm not cranking on it. You just go to educate the person and get it back as early as possible. And it's not always going to happen. I understand that because of Cyclops lesions. But
consistency.
There is hope, yeah.
Nice. All right. Gabe, what else?
From Baku asks, you have spoken in the past about how you think rehabilitation specialists should stop always using the 3 sets of 10 rep scheme when prescribing exercises, and that we should focus more on the goals and proper periodization. What I don't understand is how you decide what the patient needs. What is the point of prescribing hypertrophy training for patients? I would love more clarity on this topic.
All right, yeah, I think that's a great topic. We talk about that a lot. Like, so, you know, set reps in rehab. And traditionally, I think we've just got stuck in rehab with, you know, it's 2 sets of 10, 3 sets of 10. It starts that way. And then we just kind of like keep adding to the program over time. We don't really, you know, change things. At some point in time, you have to change the stimulus to the muscles to maximize your strength gains. So let's take a big step back and not even talk about strength, hypertrophy, all those types of things, because I even think those, you know, definitions aren't perfect in there. But we just talk about just changing the load to the tissue quite a bit. You know, for me, if you just do two sets of 10 all the time, people just don't get strong enough. They just kind of get stuck and they plateau at some point. And this is the same thing as if you were squatting, deadlifting, benching, any of those types of things. You're going to plateau with the same set rep scheme. So to really get some strength, you know, we really decrease the amounts of reps. Like, you know, we don't deadlift three sets of 10. You know, we do, you know, whatever, five sets of five or whatever we are in, you know, a specific cycle. So I think you have to change that. Going up, going down in that, and how do you pick between the different people? I just think it's the person in front of you and the tasks they need to do. But it's also about, you know, maybe not thinking of it as hypertrophy training in the rehab world, but maybe endurance training in the rehab world. You know, so maybe you go from baseline strength to some endurance and then down to more advanced strengthening. So you go 10, 15, 5. I don't know. I mean, I just made that up real quick. So, you know, but something like that where you kind of play with your rep schemes. So this is a big topic, and I think it's a huge deficit in the PT world. Yeah. Is nobody really masters the kind of strength and conditioning principles. So I'm actually in the process with, you know, a buddy of mine, Dan Lorenz in Kansas City, you know, who does, you know, he thinks a lot like this as well. We're submitting some proposals for APTA CSM next year, 2017 in San Antonio, to kind of talk about these types of things. So that way we can start applying these here. But like you said, I get a bunch of webinars on this in the inner circle. I just, you know, it's about challenging the tissue and then and just changing the stimulus, I guess.
Which we do all the time with, you know, you apply more to strength and conditioning type stuff. We do it to rotator cuff patients or baseball players who are working on a maintenance program. The season has just ended. You know, they're shutting it down a little from throwing, but now we got to ramp back up. So we're not just doing three sets of 10 3-pound dumbbells because that's what has always been accepted. We're doing 8, 9, 10-pound dumbbells, but decreasing the amount of reps that they're doing with the intentions of loading the tissue in a different fashion with the intensity and the amount of reps that they're doing. So it's out there. The research is definitely lacking, and I hope Dan, who does owe us some ribs, will eventually send those to us, that him and Mike and others will come up with better sets and rep schemes for us.
I don't think Dan's listening to the podcast. Apparently I'm just going to call him out on this because this is like the third time we've talked about those ribs.
I would just throw in too that it's where they're at in their rehab, right? If they're trying to get baseline strength on their way out, but like I've made this mistake with the athletes, like, okay, they need power and I'm doing strength-based things, like, well, we need to work rate of force development, we need to rate on like output stuff. So I think tweaking the sets and reps around those, like four reps of power-oriented exercises for discharge is different than a strength or hypertrophy-based program. But if they're 6 months out of an ACL and you're working agility and starting to do that stuff, you got to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, and even like, you know, conceptually though, you can have different periodization schemes for strength and power simultaneously.
Right.
You don't have to do three sets of 10 of a power exercise and a strength exercise. So it's really just kind of, you know, putting that together. But I just think we're guilty of just plateauing, and then we see people that have, you know, lack of strength gains over time.
It's easier. Yeah. How many times do we see 6, 8, 10 months out of an ACL, a rotator cuff repair, all these surgery, UCLs, that people are still weak? I mean, they've been to rehab for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and they're still weak. They still don't have the strength that they need, what their baseline strength compared to the other side. That's us. That's our problem. We're the ones that are creating this issue because we're not pushing our clients.
Progressive overload.
To, I mean, simple.
I think you are. I'm not.
Yeah, not mine, but I see that in the research. But I think it comes on to us as well, and I think there's so much more we need to learn.
Yeah,
and it comes down to insurance and being able to see these people.
Baseline strength, they need above if they have a compromised UCL. Yeah, how do you get like superhuman?
We can get into this. Like you talk about late stage ACL, you talk about insurance things. I still think we can do better at the early phases here.
Definitely.
You guys are both right with that more long term stuff. But for me, we can get better here. This is something we need, you know, to get better at. I don't know, maybe. Here's a product for us. Let's put together something new here, because, you know, how do we apply strength and conditioning to the rehab world
in the early phases?
In the early phases.
You know, throughout, really. I think that's going to be – that's interesting. I say this over and over and over again, but I've become such a much better physical therapist by not only just, you know, discussing things with strength coaches that I'm friends with, but interacting with them, learning from them, applying their principles. I've become such a better physical therapist. So I really recommend the rehab world kind of look into the strength world and try to, you know, put those together. You have to be careful. You can't do everything, but you have to be smart enough to put it together. So, all right, Gabe, numero tres.
Numero tres.
Is that slick?
Very Spanish.
I have such a Boston Spanish
accent. Very Espanol. Taryn from British Columbia, Canada asks, when somebody presents with limited joint range of motion, how do you decipher whether it's a mobility issue or a motor control issue? Which do you commonly see in the clinic?
Nice. All right, so limited range, mm-hmm. that's what they're saying. Is it mobility or a motor control issue?
Dave, this is... All right, now spike it.
So...
Do a cartwheel.
I'm guessing he
made... Yeah, answer this question while doing a handstand.
I'm guessing they're saying limited active range with whatever they're doing.
Well, so yeah, they said limited range, so, true. You know...
So active versus passive is the easiest thing, right? So take a...
That's a good point. I went right to the assumption right. yeah. too, but yeah.
That's like an SFMA, like one of their central tenets, right? Is yeah. if they do this in standing, but they do this in supine, well, you're already kind of looking down the road for... Mm-hmm. You know, more of a motor control issue, but I would say you take the pattern and break it down into parts, right? And we go backwards from this to what's your T-spine, what's your capsule, what's your soft tissue, what's your... And you can do that with hands-on stuff. And if you get through that long assessment and it all moves well and you feel pretty comfortable, but they still do this when they stand up, well, it's probably a motor control or a strength type of thing. And I think that I personally see a mix of both because there's general population who have true mobility issues, but then you have a lot of people who... have range they don't know how to control or use, and you can kind of get theoretical and like, well, maybe there's protective guarding because your brain's like, yeah, we should probably not let our arm crank right. back there, so it kind of like pulls back on you, and so you have someone who won't get there but then can get there passively. So sometimes when people relax, you know, you can get them really far, but then they start to get really sketchy. Those are motor control or strength issues, right? Those are dynamic stability issues that aren't showing up when you want to teach someone a skill. And I think we need to be really careful about allowing people to work through some of those. It doesn't look so great because people are like pressing kind of all weird, but on the ground they could do it. Maybe regress those people back and give them a, you know, easier thing to get through.
Yeah. I think I would make it even maybe a touch more simple, to be honest with you. If they have limited active range, but then passively they have more range, then that's a motor control issue, right? I just, you kind of said
that. Absolutely.
Which we see it a lot.
Stop cranking your foam roller.
Yeah. But I think the other thing, though, is if they have limited active range in one certain position, so let's say standing, but then they have a different active range in a different position, so maybe supine or prone or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
That type of thing, if it's, again, if that improves, it's motor control.
Yeah. Tall kneeling, I mean, it's not just putting them standing and lying down. It's, you get them in different kneeling positions. You know, you can put them in supine and have them move. It's different, and again, it comes down to SFMA, which all three of us are certified in it, or we've taken the courses, and it's a very simplistic look at somebody move and trying to tease out active versus passive limitations and joint mobility limitations.
I'd say it goes the other way with mobility, too. Sometimes they look like they have great mobility when they're standing, and they get really good on the table, like a scat block or something like that.
That's a good point.
Dink, right? Yeah. So it can go the other way, too.
They've learned to compensate. Exactly. They've learned to figure out, and that's what the body does. It learns to compensate, and that's when you start getting into issues.
High-level athletes are the best cheaters, right? That's what they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point. Nice. Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Another great episode. Continue to ask us questions. You can tell I have a little bit of a cold.
You're sitting over there. It's different for you.
Different air over there.
Continue to ask us questions. Submit some good stuff for the show. Subscribe, follow us, review. I don't know. Whatever it is
Twitter.
You do. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, so awesome.
GMO.
GMO. Well, you can't be GMO.
That's a nutritionist.
You
know, like that.
He modified organism.
It's actually cool, too, because on Twitter, someone that's a non-GMO started following
me. Yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
So they just have a search for GMOs.
And I gave his saturated fat 29.
Gave his pro GMO.
44.
Thank you, guys. MikeReynolds.com/podcast. Send us some more stuff, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.